Dhammapada, one of the earliest and most loved collection of teachings of the Buddha, there's a statement that I think is quite radical, where he proposes that all experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. With our thoughts, we create our world, and that all that we are arises with our thoughts. When the Buddha uses the word world, he's not speaking about the external world. He's speaking about our world of experience, our personal world. With our thoughts, we make our world, and all that we are arises with our thoughts. I think this is, you know, actually a statement that raises many questions, because I think many of us actually believe that our mind is something more like a mirror, more or less accurately reflecting the world as it is, not actually appreciating that our mind is the principal creator of the world of experience that we inhabit moment to moment. And this is what we're asked to investigate. And then the Buddha goes on in another discourse where I want to read this to you. He says, a tangle within, a tangle without. People are entangled in a tangle. Gautama, I ask you this, who can untangle this tangle? And the Buddha answers, a person established in virtue, developing discernment and mindfulness, ardent and clear, they can untangle this tangle. Those whose passion, aversion, and ignorance have faded away, for them the tangle is entangled. For me, it's quite remarkable that these words were said 2,600 years ago. And when we reflect on it, how timeless it seems it is, the mind's capacity for being entangled in confusion and fear and alienation. And I think when we look around us at the world today and look within ourselves, we see still how very true this question is for us. There is the tangle, and how can we untangle the tangle? I think all of us, kind of looking outside of ourselves at the world, probably appreciate the enormity of the tangle, the clash of ideologies and views, the amount of hatred existent in our world, the amount of fear and alienation and division. And the tangle, of course, is another word for suffering. It's another word for distress. And then, of course, this path always invites us to look a little bit closer to home, our personal world of relationships, engagements, the way that we interface with those around us, and to look even more clearly within ourselves. And we see it's a lot easier to get into a tangle than it is to untangle. You know, and there's a wonderful statement from the Dhammapada where it says, you know, it's not difficult for us to do things that are harmful to us. You know, it's far more challenging for us to do things that serve us well and serve to untangle the tangle. So the Buddha was very committed to understanding the nature, I would call it the architecture of distress. The Buddha never just, you know, he was very aware that there is, you know, pain in this life that none of us can avoid. There is distress in this life that comes with having a body, with just being a human being, that none of us can avoid. But there is so much distress, so much psychological, emotional confusion and distress that actually we are invited to understand. And this is what the whole of the teaching was concerned with, understanding the architecture of distress, how it is built, how it is created, how it is recreated, that distress and confusion are not life sentences, They're not something preordained. That distress and confusion are actually constructed. They're constructed. So the Buddha says, with mindfulness, with awareness, with curiosity, with motivation, we can understand this in our own life. And to understand the architecture of distress is actually an invitation to understanding the architecture of how our own world of experience is being constructed and is being built moment to moment. And although there's generally in the early texts, there's often not a lot of continuity of themes. There is one group of discourses in the middle-length sayings, which is pretty much solely dedicated to understanding this architecture, this constructing of a world and the constructing of distress and confusion moment to moment. And what I would like to do this weekend is just to focus on two of those discourses and hopefully to be able to translate them into something meaningful that can be applied to our own experience moment to moment. So looking at the tangles, some of you might have family tangles, relationship tangles. Some of you may have work tangles. We know what the tangles are because these are the places we don't want to go. These are the places that, you know, when we think of them, create those kind of tremors of, anxiety or worry or apprehension or aversion. They're often the places we want to avoid, and yet we cannot. The tangles may be in our relationship to ourselves, the inner world of expectation, of judgment, of self-image, of who we think we should be, the stories and the narratives that we may tell and retell over and over again about who we are. And these may indeed be the tangles that we're really asked to understand because they are the tangles that we take into the whole of our life. What can change in this? That's always the question, I think, in this teaching. What can change? And how will that change actually come about? How can that change be cultivated? It's interesting, I think it's so important in this practice. You know, we have this word. I have a small collection of words that I think really I would like to see go into the recycle bin. But one of them is meditation. Forgive me for saying so. because it's just not an accurate translation of what the Buddha talked about. I mean, how do you think of meditation, this word meditation, you know? What kind of associations come in your mind when you think of meditation? You know, do images come to mind, you know, of your cushion and eyes closed and stepping back from the world and times of solitude? The word in Pali that we translate as meditation is bhavana. And bhavana translates as cultivation. Cultivation. It raises a real question for us of what is being cultivated moment to moment, not only in formal practice, but in our life, recognizing that pretty much always we are practicing something, aren't we? And we're either practicing some of the age-old habits that keep tangling the tangle, or we are cultivating that which liberates the mind. We are cultivating that which liberates and untangles the tangle. And even just as a reflection, I would ask you to consider, you know, would it affect in any way your practice if you thought of this as a cultivation? If you sat down and actually asked the question, what is being cultivated in this moment? What is my intention to cultivate in this moment? Because clearly, if you look at the Buddha's teaching on inner development and the development of freedom, it all hinges upon intentional cultivation. Am I intentionally cultivating calm, patience, kindness, generosity, collectedness? Or am I sitting waiting for something to happen? These are two very, very different approaches, aren't they? And one is asking for a genuine engagement. And it applies to this question, what can change? What can change? And how does change actually come about? It's so evident to us, you know, how many of the conditions in our life we are not in control of. You know, we can't control whether it rains today. You know, we can't control the storm that comes in. We can't control that we only have lovely and pleasant people in our lives. You know, we can't control that we stay well and never age and never die. There is so much that is beyond the realm of what we can control. We can't control another person's mind. That's always quite a helpful insight. We can't control the course of another person's mind. You know, we can't control the mind, the courses of the minds of those we love and those we struggle with. That is actually not in our hands. But then we look at what is in our hands. Well, the well-being of our own hearts is in our own hands. The clarity of our own minds is in our own hands. The development of our own capacities, tremendous capacities for compassion, understanding, insight, this is all in our hands. Not being able to control so many of the conditions in our lives is not at all to imply a state of helplessness. And this is where cultivation comes in. Because we can be sure that whatever we cultivate will grow and deepen. Whether it's the unconscious and the habitual, or whether it's the conscious and the intentional. That whatever we feed will grow. Whatever we practice, we will become better at. So the Buddha set his students very much firmly on this path of cultivating the wholesome, the liberating, that leads to untangling the tangle by knowing it, first to know it. He went on to say, you know, he says, I know of no one thing that can do so much harm as an untrained mind. But then once understood, I know of no one thing that can be a greater friend and a greater ally than a well-trained mind. And this really is our dedication. This is what the whole of the path is really concerned with. We're not concerned with episodic moments of, you know, kindness or episodic moments of calm and peace. We're actually concerned with their cultivation, their naturalization, their internalization, and their fruition. Because this is where the tangle is untangled. So these two discourses I want to look at over this weekend are really, really dedicated to understanding how our world of experience, our world of the moment is really built and how it is constructed and how this is a process. This is so important. You know, Pali, the language of the early texts, this is a language of process. You know, it's not a language of states and nouns. It's a language of verbs and process. Everything is process. Selfing is process. Body is process. Mind is process. You know, so in every moment we're actually in a process of bodying or minding or selfing. And I think that shift in perspective is actually really important because when we think in terms of states and nouns, they look kind of like unapproachable, don't they? This is how I am, you know, or this is how things are, you know, or this is how you are. Whereas actually when we start to think in terms of process, we actually start to see how our world of the moment is being born, how our minding of the moment is actually happening, how our minding of the moment is actually happening, and how our selfing of the moment is actually happening. And actually what turns process and verbs into nouns and states and conclusions is identification. And that's where the tangle begins. The I and the you, the mine and the yours, the conclusions, the assumptions that this is how things are. When we think of process, we think in terms of potentiality. You know, this mind, this heart we live with as our daily companions has so much potential for deep states of distress and confusion and pain and alienation, but it is exactly the same process of minding that holds the deepest potential for great depths of understanding and spaciousness and expansiveness and compassion. And we are in the business, we are in the work of cultivating the potentiality of that mind to step out of these locked rooms of verbs and states and descriptions and definitions, more into a place of curiosity. The Buddha described this early on. He says, "Through many births I sought in vain the builder of this house of pain. Now, builder, thee I plainly see. This is the last abode for me. Thy gables yoke and rafters broke. My heart has peace. This is the end of suffering." I quite love this metaphor of house building. And here in Canada, I'm sure you can relate to it. We're always building houses here. But this process of house building, you know, building a home for ourselves. And the house we build, the house we inhabit, whether, you know, how that house, that abode where we live, can so easily be a house built upon, you know, confusion and closing in and contractedness and closing the doors and saying, this is who I am and this is how things are. So as we begin to practice, you know, we start to ask some important questions. And one of those important questions, I think, is what does a well-trained mind look like? What does a well-trained mind look like? And here the Buddha's not speaking about, you know, a performing creature. You know, he's speaking about a mind that is a friend. A mind that is a friend. A mind that has a natural capacity for ease and for spaciousness and for clarity. A mind that is untangled, that is unbound. A mind that is receptive and clear and understanding. This is what we are actually cultivating. So going into a walking period, before I begin actually the material I want to look at today, I'd like you to maybe just take some of this walking period, because as I mentioned earlier, I think it may be really good to take some of this a bit personally, to maybe take as a reflection, as an intention into your walking period. Where are the tangles? Where are the tangles in my life just now? Where is that sense of complexity or confusion or alienation or anxiety? Are the tangles within in my relationship to myself, or the tangles without in relationship to others? And maybe notice the tendency of the mind whenever we turn towards our tangles to immediately want to start producing a lot of narrative and solution finding and how to fix, rather than just to sit with the question of where are the tangles and is there a possibility of untangling those tangles? Just to just take that as a background reflection, not as a sort of an invitation to a new bout of obsession or rumination. This is a sort of background reflection. So it would be useful at this point to take some time to move your body, have some walking. And then when we come back, I want to start on the first of these discourses that I mentioned, if that's all right. There's quite a bit of room for walking upstairs, as long as you're not expecting to do mileage. But there is quite a bit of space upstairs for some short walking paths, or if you're well equipped, outside. For those of you who maybe are newer here, you know, just just the walking practice is not very different from the sitting practice. It's actually just moving, but inhabiting the body, feeling your feet touching the ground, sensing what it is to really cultivate that present moment recollection. To slow down a little, let's all try to come out of a habitual way of being today, into a present sense way of being.